But he does have to be supervised wherever he sits. Are you in charge of it tonight?
Guess so.
Does this mean he's gonna be sitting right in front of me?
Apparently.
Oh, that will be awkward. Philippians 1, if you would find that place in your Bible. Philippians 1. Good to see everybody tonight. Happy New Year. Hope you ate your black eyed peas today. Don't say what? So, Jennifer said she's going to go to sleep during class, so if y'all could help me keep her awake. How many are in post-camp coma right now? You are. Jennifer is. You're not raising your hand? You just drove up there. That was exhausting enough. It was almost like being at camp.
Sure.
All right, good. You're...
What?
No. Stephen's place has been reserved. Your wife thought it was important for you to sit...
Front center, right?
Squarely in front of me. Well, this way, the back of your head's on the camera.
No, can't see it.
I got a big head.
No. We know that. We used your head to crop.
Can we start class?
Let's pray together. What a blessing it is in this new year, Father, to be together with your family and in your presence and to have the chance to consider this great letter from your word. We pray that, that we will understand what you've communicated through your spirit and that it will be meaningful and rich and applicable to our lives as we consider tonight. In Jesus' name.
Amen.
I was stirred by something Andrew mentioned 2 weeks ago, last time we had class together. He talked about Christmas letters. Now, I did wonder if there is an age divide on Christmas letters. So, how many of you have received Christmas letters over the years? Yes? You have?
Well, my family has.
Really? Is this still going on? Because I got, what did we get, about, where's my wife?
Over there.
About 30 Christmas cards this year, something like that? No Christmas letters in any of our cards. I wonder where. Yeah, is it the people doing it?
Well, I was just going to say, I don't know if younger people exactly know what the difference between a Christmas letter and a Christmas card.
Not the same thing, is it? Yeah, because we used to get letters, especially from friends who had moved away, like moved off to California. When they sent their Christmas card, we would get a letter, a long letter, that would update us on their life. In fact, a good Christmas letter would be broken out by family members. So each paragraph told us what was up with that family member over the course of the last year, right? I'm thinking about that kind of Christmas letter. Any of y'all get one of those this year?
No, not this year.
Not this year. I didn't get one either. I think it's fading away.
I don't think
there's any surprise about that, because instead of Christmas letters, you could literally just like call someone, right? Because back when I was a teenage boy, you couldn't just do that, like call someone in California because
it was expensive.
It was expensive, yes. That was called long distance. Do y'all know what that is? See, they don't.
You had to wait till after 7.
Yes, it was extra. It was extra to call outside your zone. And yeah, it was expensive. So you just couldn't hop on the phone and call or text anybody. Now, I mean, I have a friend in Chicago that Saturday shot me a message and said, hey, you guys okay? The tornado hit you? I mean, just like instant. That never happened 40 years ago when I was a kid growing up. The other thing is I think social media has kind of replaced that, because now, instead of not knowing for a year what happened to my friends in California, I know at night what they had for dinner that night. In fact, I have a collection of pictures of what my friends eat, because they thought it was important not just that I know, but that I see it too. So anyway, if you didn't hear the sort of shaming in my voice, I was trying to communicate that. So come back to Philippians. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Is this church family close to Paul?
Yes.
Have we made that crystal clear? Andrew made that point with us in this opening greeting. We've talked about this before. Verse 3, I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always offering prayer with joy in my every prayer for you all in view of your participation in the gospel from the first day until now. He talks verse 7, how I have you in my heart and you have been partakers with me and so on and so forth. Secondly, do they know about Paul's situation as he writes this letter? I think it is pretty clear that they know he is in prison because they had already sent one of their members, Epaphroditus, to come and help him and to bring him, I think, some money probably to help him out during this time that he is in prison. So they are at least aware that he is having trouble. But now here's the thing I want you to remember. They would not be able to text back and forth with Epaphroditus and know day by day what's happening with Paul. And Paul's not able to post on Instagram what's happening that day in Rome, if that's where he's in prison, with regard to his circumstances. In fact, if you even wanted to send a letter, how long would that take? Like a letter from Rome to Philippi. Maybe months, maybe it doesn't even get there at all. That was a messy process, hand carried or maybe sent across on a ship, and maybe it gets there, maybe it doesn't. And so I do think, I agree with Gaynor, I think they know something about his circumstance, but as far as keeping up with what's been happening with him, there are huge gaps of time between their updates. And so my third question to you is, do you think they're eager to know what's happening with him? With me on that?
Surely, yes.
Yeah, surely they want to know what's happened to him. And so I wanted you to think about all that because it brings us to the next segment we're going to look at, which is verses 12 through 26 in chapter 1. When I created the paragraphs for the reading, by the way, I still have some reading sheets up here that don't have the chapters and verses if you need a new one. I tried to break these out into some segments of thought, and it seems to me from 12 to 26 we have another segment of thought which I'm going to suggest is about Paul's circumstance. In fact, that's the language he used at the beginning in verse 12. Now, I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances, just pause right there. I think that's what he's going to begin to talk to them about. Remember, he's sending Epaphroditus back to them. They've been worried about him. He'd been sick. So Paul says, you need to go back to Philippi. You need to check in. And while you're going back, go ahead and take this letter for me. And in sending the letter, he does what we might imagine. He updates them on his circumstances. And I think this segment talks about that. So I have two questions I want us to play around with tonight. The first question is, if you could look at chapter 1, 12 to 26, those verses, tell me what Paul says about his circumstances. Let's brainstorm that a little bit tonight.
He starts that by saying that his imprisonment has served to progress the gospel.
Okay. So you actually gave me two things, Bill.
Okay.
He talks about being in prison, right? And he talks about the gospel and the progress of his work in the gospel. Thank you. What else do you see? What does he tell them about his circumstances?
It's well known throughout the prison environment, the guards.
So there has been some what's the word I want to use? Some press, can I use that word?
Publicity.
Yeah, publicity, that's actually what I was thinking of, it came out of my brain. Publicity, press about the cause associated with is imprisonment and is teaching. Thank you. What else do you see? What does he say about his circumstances?
It's made some bold.
Sorry?
It's made some people bold.
Some people are more bold because of his imprisonment. Thank you. Yes, sir.
To counter on that also, the boldness came in two different forms.
Okay.
One to the furtherance of the gospel, and I'll put both of the furtherance of the gospel, but one was individuals trying to do him harm.
Okay.
And the other one's focusing on the gospel and not trying to do harm to him.
Had good motives in their preaching. So I'm gonna umbrella all that, Anthony, and say there are some problems he discusses as he updates them on his status. Thank you.
It also says that they've become more confident, which is a little bit, different than bold.
Is it?
Yeah.
Tell me how you see that difference.
Well, boldness may be because they want to come, they're willing to come forward, but confidence is behind that. And now I've got confidence, and now I can be bold.
Okay.
Confidence in what I can endure, because Paul is enduring it.
Very good. Thank you. What else?
Even though there were problems, he's rejoicing.
Ah, there it is. He's going to talk about his joy, because that's what Philippians is all about, right?
We said that Christ joy. Shall be magnified in my body, so that's what he's confident. That's what he's confident.
Is that what your translation says? Magnified? I like the way it's rendered. What Bible do you use?
King James.
Really?
But I've got, it's a combination with New.
With New King James?
Yeah.
Partnered together? Yeah. There are some places where I really like the old King James that I started with, and this is one of those places.
Yeah.
Magnified.
I would say he's reflective.
Why do you say that?
21 and 22. He reflects about going home to heaven or being here.
Yeah.
Is that the right word? Or?
I don't know. We'll play with it tonight because I want to get to that. I want to talk about that a little bit. Let me group some of this up together and take some of the things on the list and just talk about them some. Obviously, if he's going to update his friends who care so much about him in the letter, the prison is a big deal, guys, right? If one of you went to jail for preaching the gospel and didn't think that was important to include in your Christmas letter, I would be mad at you. In fact, it would just seem to me, if you're in jail for preaching the gospel, that ought to be the lead story when you send out your Christmas card. You ought to say that to us. And Paul does talk about it. In addition to in the greeting that Andrew covered, he talks about it three times in our little segment. Verse 1, or verse 13 rather, my imprisonment in the cause of Christ. Verse 14, because of my imprisonment. Verse 17, causing me distress in my imprisonment. So three times in our little segment, he alludes to that. But what I find interesting, and I want you to think about this, is it just that he mentions his imprisonment, because we'd expect that, right? It's what he says about it and what he doesn't say about it. Now, part of the reason that affects me is that I have done extensive work in the prisons. In fact, I literally have a stack of letters this thick of correspondence that I have had with guys in prison. And they're all the same. They're whiny, right? What do you think those letters say?
He didn't do it.
Talk about the food.
Oddly enough, most of them know. There was one guy who said, I'm not going to tell you whether I did it or not. And I think, well, then I probably know. But
we'll talk about the food.
The yes.
The sleeping.
How bad the food is.
Who my roommate
cellmate.
Is.
Cellmate. Yeah, you can't sleep because guys make noise all night long. The justice system has been unfair to me. I mean, I did it, but it isn't that bad. Just lots. And by the way, I'm not the one of those guys under the bus, because if I go to jail and you and I write to each other, I am going to complain. There is no air conditioning in the Texas prison system. I will complain a lot if I am in jail, right? So I am surprised that when I read down this little segment where he's telling his friends about his circumstances, there is not any whining going on. No complaining about his circumstance. In fact, think about this and we'll circle back and talk about it. When he talks about his circumstances, his focus is not largely personal. It's not about me and how I feel in my situation. Okay? The second thing that I want to ask you to notice is something that Anthony mentioned, and that is about these problems that he's facing. Obviously, prison is one of those problems, but it isn't the only one. I am really curious about this preacher problem, because the preachers clearly aren't false teachers. Do you all agree with that? How do we know that?
It says they're preaching Christ, but from the wrong motive.
Yeah. It's a motive issue, not a message issue, because, one, in verse 15, he says they're proclaiming Christ. In fact, later in 18, Paul will celebrate, well, at least they're proclaiming Christ. So the message has to be true, but the motives are true. Particularly, what does he say? What's the most specific thing he says about their motive? Why are they doing this?
Well, let's skip it over to chapter 2 and verse 3 explains it. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. So that was the two problems, strife.
Yes, but he alludes to something still in chapter 1. Gainer.
Selfish ambition, verse 16.
Yeah, thinking what? Verse 17, that's what I'm thinking.
Selfish ambition.
And?
Impure motives.
And?
Rivalry.
Sorry?
Cause him distress.
Trying to cause
all right, that's the point I'm looking for. I'm sorry, I was trying to get you to see. These guys, whatever it is that they're doing it because they want to hassle Paul. How can we make his circumstances just a little more unpleasant? Now, I read that, guys, and I have to tell you, I'm very curious. Now, I want to know who these guys are. I want to know what this is. Why are they fussing? What an odd thing that preachers would fuss with each other, right?
Well, I'm wondering, in verse 15, it says from envy and rivalry. And so I'm wondering if they feel like Paul is kind of like the top dog, and they want to be the top dog, and so they're using, you know, his imprisonment as a way to further themselves as preachers of the gospel.
Maybe as a way of disparaging him. He must be up to no good after all, they're locking him up. I don't know. It is a curious thing. This is one of the frustrating things about the Bible, because the Spirit's agenda is not always mine. And sometimes I read things and I'm really curious. One of the reasons we don't know more about this is because Paul doesn't tell us anymore. Other than the fact that this is going on, he doesn't tell us about that, which is curious to me. So think about that. He doesn't talk anything about prison life, which you would expect from a letter from a guy in jail. And he gives us very little detail about the guys out there that are making trouble for him, who maybe some brethren need to go find him and smack him around a little bit and straighten him out. Doesn't say anything about that, right? So let me ask you this question. What is his focus when he talks about his circumstances? It's not his problems in prison. It's not the prison, the guys who are harassing him. What is it?
It's how it affects the gospel.
Advancing the gospel.
Right? Yeah. So did we put that word up there? Where is it?
Second one.
Oh, gospel. Let's put this word up here. Because if you look at verse 12, that's where he starts off all of this. And I think that's what actually follows all the way through the context. My circumstances, he said, have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel. And I think if you follow this segment we're looking at all the way through, that really that is his focus. I am so excited about what's happening with the gospel. So what's happening with the gospel?
Spreading.
Progress.
Yeah, give me some more detail about that. Yes, it is spreading. That's right.
There's power in it.
There is power in it, right. Tell me specifically how he tells us it's spreading. What do you say about that? Yes, sir.
All his guards are believing.
Sorry?
His guards are believing.
Ah, he talks about the Praetorian Guard. And I'm guessing these are the soldiers that are guarding him, right? So what do you think he's doing? I think when some guard ends up being stuck next to him, he's talking to him about Jesus, right? It reminds me of Matt Basford. When the nurses got stuck coming to him, what did he do? He starts talking to him about Jesus. So much so some of them quit because they knew, oh, if I got to watch that guy, he's going to talk to me about Jesus, I'm out of here. And I'm thinking that some of the guards were responsive to what he was saying, and then they would do what? They were going to tell the other guards so that, here's his message, the gospel is spreading throughout the whole Praetorian Guard. There's a little rumble going on. Not a rumble, is it a fight?
Especially because of the way he's behaving, the way he's accepting all this, that's what really is power behind it.
We got this really weird prisoner, right? Who's not whining like everybody else. In fact, this is kind of his history, right? What was going on when he was in prison before?
He was singing.
Acts 16, yeah, they were singing. Yeah, yeah, he's got kind of a history of this thing, right? So what else does he tell us about the progress? How else is it progressing?
He's not being negative.
He's not being negative? Thank you. Alice, what in the text itself, what are we told about how else it's progressing?
Brethren in the area are more confident.
Okay, so do y'all see how that works? How would Paul's imprisonment affect other preachers?
And both of them.
Yeah, that's what happened. But explain that to me.
Scared that it what happened.
I think I would lean that way.
Yeah.
Oh, they're putting guys in jail, man. We need to be quiet about this, right? So what's the difference maker here?
His attitude.
Can you give me more? What do you think?
He's joyful in his circumstances.
His ministry in prison is no different than when he was not in prison.
Is that odd?
Sure.
Because
he's in prison.
Usually you're not happy in prison.
Yeah.
And usually if you get locked up for something,
you're not going to do it in prison.
Maybe I need to, maybe it would dial me back a little bit, right? Maybe I'd be more reticent. He's not only not reticent, what is he?
Hopeful.
Yeah, hopeful and bold. He's out there doing it. And other guys, here's how I think this is working. The other guys are looking at him thinking, Paul is locked up for preaching. And he keeps on preaching. What a little chicken I am. I need to be out there what?
Preaching.
And so other guys are getting stirred up and motivated to go and preach the gospel. And then the weirdest thing of all is he's got these other guys who somehow through their preaching or thinking they can make it harder for him. And what does he say about that? What's his conclusion about that?
Doesn't matter what their motives are as long as they're proclaiming Christ.
You know what? If they think they're causing me trouble by preaching, the good news is
rejoice.
They're preaching. The gospel is getting spread. And look at that. That's verse 18. And in this I will rejoice. Yes, I will rejoice. So this whole segment we're working through here is about the progress of the gospel. Do you see that? When he reports on his circumstances, he doesn't whine about his conditions. He doesn't complain about his brethren. He celebrates the progress of the gospel. Now, here's my question. Isn't that odd? I thought y'all would agree or disagree with me. Y'all are just blankly staring at me. I don't know what to do with that. You mean you buy it? That was spoken so confidently. Thank you, brother. Maybe you'll inspire others in the room.
We would be hard pressed to do the same.
You know, in the comfort and safety of this room, I'd really like to say, boy, I'm right there with it.
I was thinking that in verse 18 and or 19 and 20, he said it's all going to turn out okay.
Right.
Even if I die, everything's going to be great because Christ will be glorified.
Well, I was hoping.
Really care if he dies.
I was hoping, thank you, that our curiosity would be stirred, because I think that is the next question that really we ought to be interested in, and that is, well, why? Why would he fight? In fact, twice in 18, I rejoice. Yes, I will rejoice. There's that joy again that we associate with the letter. But notice, it falls right here on the back end of him talking about being in prison. But what does he celebrate? He is celebrating the progress of the gospel. So I am curious about how Paul is able to do that. And if you look at the verses that come next now we're kind of at the back end of this segment, I think they explain where that joy comes from. And I think it lies, as some of you have already started to warm up to, in Paul's sense of purpose, what his life was all about. So let me invite you to look for that. What do you see in the remaining verses Paul saying about his purpose? Because it's there. He talks about his purpose in life. What is it?
Verse 23 says his desire is to depart.
That's the ultimate thing, isn't it? Thank you.
He realizes something that we don't grasp in our country. We're all going to die. We're all going to die. It's just a matter of when.
That's exactly right. And either we cope with our mortality or we don't. Yes, sir.
Whether he lives or dies is for Christ. So that's his focus. That's his concern. So it doesn't matter.
Where does he say that?
That's in verse
21.
So if you said verse 20, that's right. And if you said verse 21, that's right too. 21 is the more familiar passage, I think, to us. For to me, to live is Christ. Boy, that's a good plain way of saying, is it? I sum up my life with one word, with one name, Jesus. That is my life. But 20 says it in a little bit different way. It's very interesting to me, and I want y'all to think about this too. What does he say in 20 about his purpose? Why is he here on earth?
To honor.
Sorry?
To honor Christ.
To honor Christ? Does anyone translation render it differently?
To exalt
Christ? And what did Gaynor's say?
Magnify.
Magnify Christ. I actually like that one best. Because what does it mean to magnify something?
Make it big.
So when I got back from vacation, some of my pills got mixed up. And they were the little bitty tiny pills. Two kinds of little bitty tiny orange pills mixed together. One of them slows down my heart rate, and the other slows down my blood pressure. You don't want to take both. So I had to separate these two little bitty orange pills that had gone together. How do you do that?
Magnifying glass.
Because I can't see, I can't read them anymore. My eyes just aren't that good anymore. So I got my phone out. Young people don't have any idea what we're talking about. The rest of you do, right?
Yeah,
what did I do with my phone?
You enlarged it.
I took a picture of them, right? And I blew it up so I could see the writing. I magnified the pill so I could see what was on it, right? I feel very old telling you that story. But
Well, his actions were giving clarity.
a little different way of putting it.
So I do want you to think about this, because it's real. When you just stop and really pause, the idea of a human being making Christ bigger is just kind of odd. How could we ever do anything to make Christ bigger? What does that even mean? Ideas?
Well, it's all from a perspective, you know, like from God's perspective, he's not making him bigger, but man, you know, Christ is not well known in the circles that he's in, and he was told when he was called, I'm sending you to proclaim, and he knows that mission's not over.
Right. I think we forget that most of the people around us do not think Jesus is very important, because we live in the circle surrounded by people who think Jesus is everything, right? And we forget that there are people living their lives every single day and Jesus isn't even relevant to them. He's small. What's our job?
Magnify
him. To make him big, to help people see and appreciate how great and important he is. And so, I think Paul, in 20 and 21, is helping us understand why he's so happy right now. And it begins with this. My purpose and mission on earth is to help everyone see how big Christ is. That's why I live. That's why I breathe. So much so, in 21, he can say, for to me to live is Christ. Right? And so that's why he can go on from there and say, in fact, I don't care whether I live or die. Because in death, what might he be able to do?
Magnify Christ.
He might be able to magnify Christ by giving his life as a martyr. There might be people who see that, hear that, see him, who are inspired to preach, who come to know about him. I mean, even as a prisoner, that's what's happening. So Paul's attitude is, if he needs me to die to magnify him, I can do that. Because, what does that mean? For him.
I'm
going to be with Jesus. I'm just going to go be with Jesus. What's the other possibility?
You stay and help them.
I need, you know, it might be that he says, no, the way you can magnify me is keep doing what you're doing, right? Wow, keep doing what you're doing, like more prison. You think Paul would have been okay with continuing to be in prison?
He's writing.
I'm teaching people. People who, how many guard might he have reached if he hadn't been in prison?
Zero.
In fact, you walk back through his prison period, think about some of the people he was able to talk to.
He wrote quite a few letters.
Wrote letters, had some meetings with some important people, right? Opportunities to share the gospel. And so Paul's attitude is, I really don't care. If dying will exalt Christ, I'm good with that. If living enables me to continue doing work and I can exalt him, I'm good either way, because that is why I live to exalt Jesus. Okay. So, got a few minutes left to ponder this second question that I want you to consider with me. And that is, as this picture emerges of how Paul saw his life, and now we know where the joy came from, why he could be joyous on this occasion, what's the takeaway? What do you learn? Anything about all this that makes you uncomfortable? Because it does me.
One thing that comes to my mind is, I think in a sense, especially in this country, we think we have to be in a comfortable position to magnify Christ, to make people focus on Christ. Paul is in prison. How uncomfortable could that be? Yet he is taking that opportunity to magnify Christ. To your point earlier, a lot of us in here and a lot of people in prison probably would be complaining a lot, to where he's in a bad situation and he's still talking Christ. So the thing that comes to my mind is, it doesn't have, there's always the right time.
I think sometimes my life is too much about me and not about him. Y'all buy that? sometimes my life is too much about me and not about him. And what I mean by that is that my life is a lot about how my circumstances, how my circumstances are. You've heard me use this illustration before. If I could get back far enough, and I can't, and take a picture that would include everybody in this room, and then throw it up on the monitors, what's the first thing you would look at?
Yourself.
Wow. Selfish people? Why?
You want to know if it's a good picture or not?
We do. We first look at ourselves, and then Dorothy gave away the second half. If I look good,
it's a good picture.
That's a weakness of democracy. We vote what is best for us.
Or we think we do. Another discussion for another time. I do think that look, I took a selfie with my granddaughter last night, and as soon as it popped up, I thought, do I look okay in that? I look kind of stupid. How does that work? Right? That's what we do. And I think that how we look at pictures is a lot how we look at life. Life is good if my circumstances are good. And if my circumstances are good, then life is good. And if my circumstances are not good, then life is not good. It's all about what happens to me. And I wonder sometimes think about how we're emotionally impacted when things are not going our way. I'm getting laid off. There's a big problem on the house that has to be fixed. I've got medical issues. I'm going to have surgery, yada, yada, yada. Think about how we emotionally respond to that versus how we emotionally respond to kingdom setbacks. Like finding out someone's left Jesus or finding out someone's responded to the gospel. How do we respond emotionally to things like that? You see? And I just wonder if sometimes it's too much about me and not about enough about what happens to him. In fact, I'm a little suspicious if this early statement isn't setting up what's coming. Because what's he going to have to deal with at the beginning of chapter 4? Remember?
Squabbling.
What?
Squabbling.
Two ladies in the church that Paul, all the way over in Roman prison, has heard about fussing with each other. And I'm just wondering, is it fussing because someone's really focused on their personal feelings, getting wounded, or not getting their way personally about something? Because what Paul's going to go on to say to them is, you know, guys, we were all fellow workers in the gospel. What are you thinking about? Your personal stuff or the gospel? Are you focused on that? And so I wonder if Paul's appealing to himself as an example that this shouldn't be about you. It ought to be about the kingdom and what's best for the kingdom. And sometimes, guys, I think we struggle too because we make it too much about us and not about him. And by the way, what do we lose along the way when we do that?
Joy.
That elusive joy. In our pursuit, consumed with self to get it, we wind up losing along the way. Last thing I want y'all to take away when you leave tonight, because I'm about to get caught by the bell, is I want you to ponder what it looks like to exalt Jesus every day, to magnify him. I think there are two ways that happens. And I wish we had time just to talk about all this. The one way it happens is to share the story. People need to know about what Jesus did and its personal impact on them and how awesome that is. And you'd be surprised at the people who don't know the story. That's why we've got to share the gospel, folks. People don't know how great he is. And the way we magnify Jesus to our world is by telling them his story. The second way I think we do it is by living out our relationship with him. You know what I mean by that? Tell me.
Whether things are good or bad.
by the way I live my life. This is Matthew 5, 13 through 16, right? Let your light shine before good men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. I magnify Jesus by reflecting him when I go out into the world, showing the impact the gospel has on life. And so I think it's really worth considering what's underneath Paul's weird joy. Really is understanding who he is and why he's here. And until we get there, it continues to be elusive. Thank you.